Thank you. Moving on, we are now at 2276 Jeremy Shapiro, DVM. Ms. Tracy, will you read the front load?
Case 2276, the complainant is Kristen Brown. The respondent is Jeremy Shapiro, DVM. On November 12, 2021, Calvin, a 10-year-old golden lab mix, was presented to the respondent for quality of life evaluation due to pain and decreased mobility in the hind end. After exam and discussion, it was determined that the dog may benefit from an FHO surgery. On December 2, 2021, the dog was presented to respondent for an FHO procedure. While reevaluating the dog, respondent identified that the dog had a ruptured cranial nerve in the right stifle. TPL surgery was performed instead of the FHO. On December 7, 2021, the dog was seen for an incision dehiscence. Staples were placed. On December 22, 2021, the dog was presented to respondent for a recheck. Respondent noted a loose screw which was causing swelling and bruising. Surgery was performed that day to replace the loose screw. On December 28, 2021, the dog was presented to an emergency facility due to concern of infection of a surgical implant. The emergency veterinarian suspected non-union fracture of the surgical site, damaged orthopedic plate, and rejection of orthopedic screw. Complainant elected to humanely euthanize the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant nor respondent present, and I have Dr. Nosley as the lead on this one.
And Mr. Stoll monitoring.
Oh, sorry. Mr. Stoll monitoring. Missed that.
No worries.
Okay. Yeah, this is a real difficult one to look at all the information. And basically, what happened was orthopedic surgery was performed, and the implant failed. So there was the question, of course, why. The investigative committee did a pretty good job of discussing that. It seemed to boil down to the respondent feeling that there was a non-compliance with the aftercare, and that led to the failure of the implant. But there was a lot of things that went on with the dehiscence, with the loose screw, with the discussions with with the client as the problems developed. So it was just the conclusion that it was a non-compliance based on the material, and I'm not convinced that we can say that. We haven't directly heard from the complainant as an explanation on that. So I think that the complainant should be given an opportunity to explain those things. And I also have more questions surrounding the procedure, the evaluation of the patient and the procedure. So
I would like to say something.
Go ahead. Come.
The complainant was given an opportunity to submit their position in this, both mm-hmm. at the investigative committee and here today, and chose not to.
I believe that we should give them another opportunity, because the whole case hinges on what happened after. During whether there was compliance or non-compliance with the aftercare. Ultimately, we ended up with an infection. We ended up with screws coming out, and it could very well be that this was due to non-compliance, but there are other possibilities too. And so I would make a motion that we would move this to an informal, just so we can get more information about the aftercare and also more information about the evaluation and the procedure.
We have a motion to move this to an informal. Do I hear a second? Okay, well, you hesitated there, Mr. Lobey. Okay, without a second, motion fails. Do we have an alternative motion or any further questions or discussion?
Madam Chair, I have a question of the esteemed DVMs on the board. There was also a bent plate involved, if I recall.
Well,
was it questionable?
Yeah,
that was a really difficult read for me from the emergency venue,
sure.
Knowing that that plate is supposed to be bent. That's part of.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
And that pained me hearing them explain to the owner that this is what happened. And
yeah.
You hope that that decision to euthanize the pet wasn't made on that information.
Yeah, I would agree that there's questions there. And the plate screws coming out, and if things happened the way the respondent said about non-compliance, and it's even conceivable that it could have sustained some damage, but that doesn't matter.
That's where I was going.
It doesn't matter. I would agree that that's not a factor.
Yeah, this one is tricky for me because I actually had my dog Kaya, who I still have, who's 14, who I wasn't able to do the TPLO surgery on her, but I did whatever the next step down was, which is kind of like a rubber
extra
band.
Cap. Yeah. Extra cap.
And she was right at 40 pounds, so she was kind of on that weight line. And, 6 months later, whether it was that she was too active or whether it was the procedure, I'm not sure which, but, she ended up with an infection in there. Her leg was painful. We ended up amputating it. And she's, that was 6 years ago. And I don't know, to this day, and it was never my intention that I took responsibility that maybe it was us and not necessarily
sure.
the procedure.
Sure.
And who knows? I thought we did everything we could. I pulled her in a wagon down the street instead of letting her walk. But, these things happen.
They do happen.
The best, I realize now, that wasn't the gold standard procedure. But
That very scenario that you described, I have done many times as a alternative to TPL, which is
expensive. Yeah.
We had a very elderly, overweight dog here, and one of the questions I would have directly for the respondent, I believe there was concern on the investigative committee also, should any surgery have been done on this dog?
Certainly not.
I also had questions about the skin sutures. I had questions about four screws instead of six. Why there wasn't, when the screw backed out, why was there not a culture and sensitivity taken at that time, which is pretty standard orthopedic. If you've got a screw that fails, you need to culture that screw hole to see what's going on. Maybe antibiotics at that point. The doctor didn't call after not being able to radiograph after putting the screw back in, because the radiograph machine was down, but he didn't call and have her come in then for a radiograph when the machine was working. The staples were placed by the office manager under the direction of a veterinarian. We don't know what that means, and we did end up with an infection. So those are just my questions, and they may all have a very, very good answer. And
Ms. Solomon?
Yes, Madam Chair. Based on all this additional information, since this is new information from the discussion, can the motion be reconsidered for a second, or can it be remade?
Just make a new motion.
Make a new motion, okay.
So I would make the motion that in order to hear more information from the respondent and the client, hopefully the complaint, that we would move this to an informal.
Second.
Okay, we have an emotion and a second to move to an informal. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
No, motion carries. Move this to an informal now.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to 2278, Austin Gifford, DVM. Tracy, please read the summary.
Case 2278, the complainant is Lisa Ward, the respondent is Austin Gifford, DVM. November 4th, 2022, Sadie, a 12-year-old female dachshund, was presented to respondent for a dental and mass removal. During the procedure, heat support was provided due to the dog's hypothermia. The procedures were performed, the dog was recovered and placed in a kennel with continued heat support. Upon discharge, it was noted that the dog had an area of erythema, an ulceration of the right inguinal area that appeared to be a thermal burn from external heat support intraoperatively. Respondent advised complainant of what transpired, expressed sympathy, and informed complainant that he would ensure that the dog made a full recovery without additional costs to her. When the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have a complainant here nor the respondent, but we have Mr. Stoll monitoring or speaking?
Monitoring only.
Okay. Thank you. And Ms. Frost, you want to lead on this one?
Yes. This is a really difficult case to look at, mostly because you never want to thermal burn your patients. I'm super impressed that they got it so fast, because typically it takes a few days, but I'm guessing because it was in the inguinal area without hair covering it, that was much easier to identify. But again, kudos to them to looking at the patient, because this could have been super easily missed. And unfortunately, I've seen these come in. And it's hard to communicate with a client why this happens. First of all, the ideal is it doesn't, but it can. It's a complication of using heat to keep your patients from being severely hypothermic, which I just want to say for the record is one of the causes of anesthetic death is hypothermia. So this could have been much different if we hadn't used heat in a very bad way. And so where this was not ideal, the fact that the veterinarian educated the client and followed through on the care, I don't know that you could have done better. And you know, the measures that they took to prevent a burn also is good practice. So where I agree that this was not the outcome that you would want, it is a potential complication. And so I do agree with the investigative committee, and I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2278 with no violation. Any other discussion?
Yeah, I agree that it shouldn't have happened, and there are all kinds of warnings about using hot water bottles, but they caught it immediately, like you said, and then they tried to remedy the situation as the best they could. So I would agree.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, now on to 2280, James Crawford, DVM. Tracy, please read the summary.
Case 2280, the complainant is Melanie Lewis, the respondent is James Crawford, DVM. On December 3rd, 2021, Lord Rufus Bartleby, a 6-year-old male Australian Shepherd mix, was presented to respondent with right rear end lameness. The dog was examined and sedated, radiographs were performed. The dog was diagnosed with a ruptured cranial cruciate ligament and was discharged with carbapenem. On January 6, 2022, the dog was presented to Dr. Halstead for a second opinion. After examining the dog and reviewing respondent's medical records and radiographs, Dr. Halstead suspected bone cancer or valley fever. Further diagnostics were performed and bone cancer was the likely diagnosis. Referral to an oncologist was made. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 322032 number 11, gross negligence, failure to read the radiograph correctly, which led to inaccurate diagnosis and treatment instead of referring the dog to an oncologist. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We do not have the complainant nor the respondent, but we do have Mr. Stoll here.
Yes.
He's going to read a statement.
Yes. A brief statement. From the moment that he received the complaint in this matter, Dr. Crawford has been completely honest and contrite in his response. In fact, during the June 7th IC meeting, he told them that he accepted full responsibility for what happened. He has also apologized to the complainant in his response and admitted that he simply missed spots of bone damage in the x-rays when he initially read them on December 3rd, 2021. As he told the investigative committee, Dr. Crawford simply got too busy and did not take time at the end of the day to do what he has always done for the past 14 years in private practice, and that is to do an after-hours reread of all radiographs he takes on a particular day. Factually, there's really no dispute as to what happened, and Dr. Crawford has not only accepted full responsibility for his oversight, but he's also scaled back the volume of his practice and taken additional steps to make sure that he always has time to thoroughly review all x-rays. He has also created a daily radiograph review form that he fills out at the end of every day. That form has a box to be checked once he has read and reread all x-rays. As a result, this is not a case that calls for an informal interview, and instead, Dr. Crawford is willing to entertain a consent agreement that would involve either a decree of censure or a violation of R311-5011. Of those two, I suggest that a decree of censure would be the most appropriate since the outcome for this animal was not impacted as a result of Dr. Crawford's oversight. And he does not need to attend any type of CE to learn that he needs to slow down and take time to review his x-rays. That lesson has already been learned by Dr. Crawford. Finally, I wish to point out that Dr. Crawford has no disciplinary history of any kind over the course of his 14-year career, and this is the first and hopefully the last board complaint that he has ever received. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this one.
Definitely the respondent agreed about the mistake that was made here. And the question is, what is the remedy for that? I would disagree with one thing that Mr. Stoll said, that the animal was not impacted. We had a period of time where the complainant thought they was dealing with a cruciate ligament, where the animal had bone cancer, if you will, extremely painful. There was a period of time there where they before that was discovered, that if they would have chose to go with an oncologist, that's one thing, but even just further addressing the animal's pain, bone pain, and we didn't have an opportunity to do that. So I would disagree that the animal was not impacted by this. The question, I think, is the remedy, and the investigative committee recommended gross negligence for failure to read the radiograph correctly. And also there was a failure to read a telemedicine report, which showed the bone, the neoplasia bone lesions, and led to the inaccurate diagnosis and treatment, causing the patient to suffer. And I would agree with that, and I can see also that possibly it might be the statute of acceptable standards. So I think that's the question here, is what is the remedy and how far do we go with that? And I would like to see what the other members feel about whether this rises to gross negligence or is it the lesser?
Ms. Solomon?
Yes, very generally, I think it's the positive response of the respondent is commendable. Taking responsibility, acknowledging the problem, and taking corrective action. So I would be supportive of something less than gross negligence.
And I just have a question for the DVMs on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So how easy is it to confuse the cruciate ligament tear with bone cancer? Is it?
It shouldn't happen.
No, but I think, okay. You know, to Mr. Stoll's point, if you look at something quickly, you're not really paying attention. You know, it was definitely present, but you have to be present in order to notice it, right?
Okay.
And so not excusing that by any stretch of the imagination, but
right.
I think, unfortunately, in veterinary medicine, any animal that's limping on a hind leg is, by default, a torn cruciate.
I know, right?
Sometimes that's just the easy diagnosis,
right.
Because it happens a lot and you're not really paying attention. And I agree with you, like the telemedicine report, but I have never utilized that type of service where it says this or this, and sometimes you wonder how reliable they are, like how many other times did he get gobbledygook from something
sure.
that and ignore that.
Sure, but if you read it, then you would question.
Right,
and
exactly.
And I would add to that, cruciate is not a radiology
right.
diagnosis.
Exactly.
It can be supportive. But the diagnosis is made by palpation, or MRI if you want, but it's palpation is how you make that diagnosis.
Well,
so you should never confuse those two if you have a significant bone lesion.
And did he use it as supporting, not as further diagnostic? You know what I'm saying?
I didn't read anywhere in there about palpation, checking for a drawer, doing a sit test, all these things.
Missed a lot.
All these things we do when we're suspecting, like a cruciate, because that's the first thing we suspect.
And that was in this report, though, whenever for the AI report on those x-rays, it's the same with the in-house urine reader where it gives you all this, this is what was in there, and you look at the slides, you're like, that was not in there at all. So AI has significant limitations, and so
sure.
I've seen doctors not even address in their record the junk sometimes that shows up on this AI. And so that's where when it says for radiologist review, I was like, but that's not a radiologist. This is
it's
an artificial intelligence.
Right.
And so I think that's a big difference that we need to notate, was that a radiologist did not say this and you missed it. It was AI, which there has to be millions of data points and nobody has that yet. And so what you're doing is paying for a service to get them more data points. So when you see AI right now, it's kind of like, that's a little scary because you can't put a case on that.
That
made me nervous.
That's why I use the term telemedicine.
Yeah, but this says, but in our summary, it
says
different. So I would recommend that we update this summary if this goes anywhere, because I don't want that to look like a radiologist reviewed this, that it was an AI generator.
Sure.
But regardless of the source, whether it's a radiologist, and I agree the record should be corrected, that it's AI.
It was AI.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the source, the report included the correct diagnosis.
In this case, it was fairly cut and dry. There was lytic bone lesions. That's hard to overlook and say that we should.
And he didn't, right? He didn't say that.
No.
He wasn't defending.
He wasn't disagreeing with that. So.
So do we have a motion for a consent agreement then, or?
Yes.
Okay.
But I would like to change from the gross negligence.
Okay.
I guess
what is
what?
That one?
What's lesser than that?
The professionally acceptable.
Professionally acceptable.
Yeah.
Which
that
is.
Sounds good.
5.1.
So the ARS 322232 number 12.
Right.
It relates to R311501 number one. Yeah.
Yes. And.
And if you'd like to change the findings of fact to reflect that it was an AI and not a radiologist review.
Yes. And so, then, the motion would be to offer a consent agreement based on that violation, as we
As Tracy stated.
As Tracy stated.
Yes.
Very good. I like that.
Is the reasoning the same? The reason for the failure to provide?
Inaccurate diagnosis and causing the patient to suffer, yes.
Okay. So we have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Let's do roll call.
Any discussion?
Oh, sorry. Any discussion?
I just wanted to add one more, since I didn't, I mean, everybody said this, that they appreciated how the doctor took responsibility. In the years that I've been on this board, I had never seen this level of, I mean, you often hear that, oh, we changed this, we changed that, and you wonder, did you really?
Right.
You know, we trained our staff, we did whatever. He outlined in there very professionally, look, here's how I was trained to do this in this other occupation, and here's how I do it here, and I screwed up, and this is what I'm gonna take what I know how to do well, and I'm gonna apply it here, so I don't do this again. I mean, I thought that was very refreshing, and a totally different perspective than what we usually see.
Yes.
Agreed.
And then you hate to say, but damn it, you did something wrong.
Yeah.
And we did.
It doesn't undo it.
It definitely left it suffering in this patient.
Yes, yeah.
The primary concern in this case. Make a motion to accept the
Well, hold on. We findings. Did not do the roll call, though.
Oh,
so let's do the roll call on that part.
Okay.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Mr. Loki?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Krager?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay.
Now okay.
The next part.
So I'd like to make a motion to offer a consent agreement and accept the findings of fact as modified, and conclusions of law.
Okay. Do we add anything else there, or that was?
The conclusions of law is modified.
As modified.
As modified.
Right. Okay. I think you guys encapsulated all that in that prior motion that you offered a consent agreement with the findings of fact and conclusions of law as modified, as stated.
Okay.
And then the order.
Prior.
And there was,
the prior.
You said none.
There was a letter of concern. Let's see, there was, doesn't say what the letter of concern was for. It looks like there was a potential misdiagnosis, and the board concluded that respondent's care and treatment of the pet did not rise to the level of a violation, but was issued a letter of concern.
Excuse me, Tracy, but it did involve a diagnosis. Is that?
That's
did I hear correct?
Okay. Yeah, that's
okay, so I would, for the consent agreement in case 2280, include a period of probation for 1 year to obtain 4 hours of CE in the area of bone disease.
And then that signed.
If not signed. Within 30 days, then moves to informal. Is that the way it works?
Okay. Second. So we have a motion and a second. Tracy, or Victoria, let's do roll call again.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Krager?
Aye. Okay. Is everyone doing good? We don't need a break yet.
We will shortly.
Okay. A little bit farther. Okay, next up is 2283 Joanna Norman, DBM. Tracy, read the summary.
Yes. Case 2283, the complainant is Christine Valley. The respondent is Joanna Norman, DBM. On April 29, 2021, Toby, a six-week-old male Australian Shepherd was presented to respondent for a companion animal eye registry exam to be registered with the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals. The puppy was adopted by complainant. The puppy was examined by her primary care veterinarian in May and June 2021 with no concerns with the dog's vision. On October 8th, 2021, the dog was presented to the primary care veterinarian to be neutered and check vision. Dr. Jacobs noted that pupillary light response in the left eye appeared to be slow, if not absent. However, the right eye appeared to be normal. Referral to an ophthalmologist was made. On November 16th, 2021, the dog was presented to Eye Care for Animals for evaluation. It was determined that the dog did not appear to be visual in either eye. On December 7th, 2021, complainant humanely euthanized the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yes, so in reviewing this case, and it's pretty basic as to what was listed here. The pet was examined as a six-week-old puppy as part of a good breeder's protocols to have them evaluated. Australian Shepherds are known to have congenital eye issues and other things that can develop. So the puppy was evaluated at that time. The retinal detachment, there wasn't any that was observed. That's something that can progress. It doesn't mean they're born with it. It's something that can happen over time, not necessarily at birth. The pup was declared clear at that time, had some other persistent pupillary membranes, but again, not retinal detachment, and the puppy was adopted. And the fact that didn't seem to be any visual abnormalities in the puppy until November, which was 7 months post-exam from the respondent, that's something that was a progressive, it was something that occurred after that exam, more than likely. I would tend to agree with the recommendations of the investigative committee and see no violation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to dismiss case number 2283. Any more discussion?
Is it worth addressing the complainant's response to the investigative committee?
Yes, thank you.
I was going to comment on that a little bit. I mean, she clearly does not understand that. She's relying on the feedback that she got from a layperson that doesn't know the difference between congenital and genetic. And there's not any indication that this iris to iris persistent pupillary membranes had anything to do with, or does not have anything to do with, a detached retina. I mean, it was not detached when she looked at it. And I mean, this is so far removed. I mean, this veterinarian did not have the patient-client relationship with that owner. She bought the dog later.
Right.
You know, if there was anything, and her money was refunded by the breeder and whatever else. I mean, we found that out. And Dr. Norman, it seems, bent over backwards to trace down all the contacts that this woman had and make sure that they were giving her the proper feedback. She went out of her way. And it never should have been filed in the first place.
Yeah, I think that sometimes whenever the investigative committee has to have a discussion over such science, right, it is really, really difficult to understand as a pet owner. And so I think it's making sure that she knows that it wasn't dismissive. It was following what the diagnosis was at the 6 weeks versus, like Dr. Thompson said, is congenital versus genetic and a deterioration, and just being really clear that this isn't an unregulated doctor going rogue. Yeah. This is a regulatory body looking at all the facts and making sure that those things are in order. And so it was really unfortunate that was her takeaway, that it was disrespectful towards her. But would it not be true that it was really a decision of what the puppy's quality of life would be with no vision and potentially like a bilateral nucleation versus humane euthanasia, in the end for...
Yeah, I mean, I have seen plenty of dogs that are blind.
Especially Aussies.
Yeah, and have a good quality of life. So I was actually surprised by the outcome and heartbroken, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, that is her decision as the owner.
Exactly, and I think that's kind of a point to be made, though. As the owner, she felt like this was the best choice for her pet. And so that isn't something that a veterinarian can ultimately take responsibility for.
Or I'd say the best choice she thought for her, not
I think she felt the other way.
She didn't want to take care of it.
Running into a couple things.
Yeah, but again, I think that ultimately it wasn't, the pet not being with her anymore was not a veterinarian's decision.
So that was her choice.
Right, so I just think that needs to be said. Because the pet didn't pass because of a failure of a veterinary.
Okay, no other discussion. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Dismiss 2283.
Then we should do it. Right.
Okay, so we are going to take a 5-minute break.
Before we get to it.
Yes.
A 2-minute break.